number six, discussion and possible action on selection of a large cap equity investment management services by Richard Holden.
Thank you. More handouts coming. We killed a bunch of trees this time.
This is the same information that you have that you've got.
Yeah, one of a couple of things. Number one, the change that occurred, BlackRock, Merrill Lynch, or whatever. But also another precipitating factor was the retirement of Bob Dahl, who basically was the overall large cap strategist behind the way in which this portfolio was constructed and run. But our research team, I asked them what other options would we have in looking at something that was large cap core to replace the BlackRock portfolio if that were the wishes of the board. They put together a number of managers within this report and comparing them to the overall returns that this retirement plan has experienced with BlackRock. And the managers that they came up with are on page one of the report. BBH Core Select, the Dreyfus Appreciation Fund, FMI Large Cap Fund, and Stralum Equity Institutional Fund. All of these, are mutual funds, so all of the results you see are net of fees, and that's after all of the various expense ratios. The expense ratios are what I consider personally rather high, and part of the reason why they're high is that they've had very good results, and they quite frankly are charging for those results. All of them are very close to 100 basis points, range from 97 to 100 basis points. Number of holdings within the portfolio ranging from an average of 30 up to an average of 55. They have had, a difference, if you will, in the overall capitalization of the portfolios. Dreyfus being far and away the one with the largest capitalization. And the other is really not a significant variance in overall capitalization, ranging from like $37 billion in average capitalization up to $72 billion. So they are large cap. They have had significant returns over long periods of time. And the chart of those returns are on page two from the standpoint of beginning in the fourth quarter of 2005, which quite frankly is the time at which we were able to get numbers from going back on the BlackRock portfolio. And you can see that over this period of time, Brown Brothers Harriman has had the largest, return. Followed by the FMI Large Cap Portfolio, Dreyfus Appreciation, and then Stralum. BlackRock is down towards the bottom of this. And the Russell 1000, which is basically the hunting ground for large cap capitalization securities, is just above the BlackRock portfolio.
Richard?
Yes.
I know in some of these circumstances, and that maybe you know me, a lot of times when you have a plan like this, the fund itself is making concession as much as 25 basis points to the third party. Do y'all receive any type of reimbursement from these funds?
None at all.
Okay. Well, that's their, that is their fee then.
That is absolutely their fee.
When you say 25 basis points?
Yeah, there are some funds which have what they call 12B1 fees. Mm-hmm. And those fees are if you've got a broker consultant, quite frequently that broker consultant collects those fees.
Yeah, I know they do.
We do not. We have no affiliation with any broker dealer, period. We're an independent registered investment advisor, and any and all of the revenues we get come from our clients, and that's it. We have no ties to anyone else.
But what's happening right now is BlackRock is actually doing all of this. I mean, we had the actual mutual fund manager, so to speak, here, representative here. And they hadn't performed very well, but they were actually doing all these trades inside that mutual fund. In this instance here, we would just buy mutual fund shares.
Right. Well, you had a separate account management set up, that, and the assets were...
But we would have to sell to go buy these shares.
Yes.
It would be a total different animal. It would be a mutual fund large cap.
But you can sell part of the share or whatever. You don't have to sell the whole fund. But
The other thing is that, quite frankly, the results here of BlackRock are gross of fees.
Yes.
Yeah, the results of all the other portfolios you see are net of fees.
So I think that, not to speculate, but I think there has been some real problems with a lot of the assets out there in the real world, and I mean mortgage-backed securities, some of which were some of the toxic ones. You know, nobody knows about where those went. They're still out there, and I think some of the retirement-type funds got pushed, got loaded with some of those funds, or some of those securities, and, they weren't all terribly bad, but, you know, I tell you what, it's an interesting thing that you look at every one of these charts, they're all the same. I mean, they're doing exactly the same virtually. And the question I have is, If it's just buying a mutual fund for our large cap sector, why can't this committee just do that?
Okay. Why can't who?
Yes.
What do you mean, brother?
What do you mean? I don't understand. What do you mean?
Is that what we're doing here?
Yes.
Or are we hiring a manager to do
that? No. You're basically doing the same thing we did with...
Okay, so it's a direct.
Keep going with this line of thinking there. Why should we pay somebody 100 basis points for their past experience? I promise you, I can go out there and find somebody with great past experience. All I care about is their future experience.
Right.
Which you don't know, and I don't know.
That's correct.
But let's look at what we did with BlackRock, because when we went with them, none of us were probably here. No. But at that point, we probably did it on their past experience, thinking their future experience is going to be like it. And before fees, they didn't even keep up with the S&P, the Russell 1000.
Right.
So if we could have bought a Russell 1000 index fund for about 9 basis points, and we would have beaten BlackRock substantially.
Oh, yeah.
A whole bunch.
Yeah.
But they all would have looked like this line.
We're all overly influenced by our own personal experiences. Yeah. But as I've told you, our plan is very, I mean, we're like, we were knocking on 200% funded at one point, all right? A very substantial portion of it is a Vanguard large cap value exchange traded fund that's about 12 basis points.
Right. Right.
And that's been it's the market. You buy the market. But you're also getting in there with a 3% dividend yield, because its value is going to be higher than the S&P 500 dividend yield. So we're only trying to make 6.5%, and you can get half of that with your dividend yield, which is always cash coming back in, which helps you pay these bills here without having to sell. because the dividend's there when the market's up, and the dividend's there usually when the market's down.
Right.
I'm sorry. So you are recommending... Yeah, I thought we were going to go out and hire another manager.
No, I quite frankly, you know, from the standpoint of, you want to call it, bang for your buck, I think we're going to find a, or should be able to find a reduction in custody fees when you go to a system like this, because no longer are trades being done through that.
All those trade fees,
they're gone. Wells Fargo charges for processing the trades, and obviously because it's a custom managed account, there's more trades.
BlackRock charges 5 cents a share.
Of course, mutual funds do trades too, but they get
it's all priced.
They're a little more economical in that they're doing large scale things.
Well, and of course, their turnover. I just ran down the deal. FMI is 28% turnover. Drive is 26, BPH 17, and Spraylum 17. So that's all the turnover they've got in that particular fund.
Yeah, it's on. Yeah.
And BlackRock is running 100%.
They were churning our fund money, I think.
But I think the question, if I follow Director Rankin's thing, is Richard, is these funds, these actively traded funds at 100 basis points, is that a better way to go than to buy an index fund at a lower? In other words, are you gonna make that 85 basis point differential up in these type of funds as opposed to just being an index fund that you're just buying the market? If you're just buying that index
and stuff. Well, all of these managers have quote unquote, and Bill said what it was earlier that. We buy a manager when he's above the index, and then that's usually the case. The question is, will he remain above the index? And hopefully that's going to be the case. We don't know. But all of the results of these managers are net of fees. And the index we're looking at it are basically gross of fees. So, I mean, there would be a little bit of a reduction there, but... You know, 9 basis points or whatever it happens to be. But from the standpoint of, there's no guarantee that a manager's going to do better. But from the standpoint of long periods of time, have these managers done better? And the answer to that. Is over most time frames, or they wouldn't be above the index at this particular point.
So what percentage of all managers are above the index? I know the answer.
Well, it depends on when you. It depends on when you mark that.
Over 10-year periods.
Over 10-year periods, if you looked at, first of all, the data you're talking about are done against all mutual fund managers, have like 150 and 200 basis point, whatever.
I know, but they're also
they're
only done on those that survive 10 years because a lot of them do so terrible that they merge them into other funds and they go out of existence.
Answer's
like 20.
I pulled up some numbers and because I knew this debate was coming. I pulled up Vanguard. Vanguard expense, Vanguard 500, which is big, you know, they're the big daddies. And I'm not saying that their expense ratio is 0.05.
Right.
Their turnover is 0.04. Year to date, they've earned 13.26, and we'll compare it to BPH at 14.91. 1 year, 28, 25 to 29. 3 year, 14 to 15. 5 year, 1.56 to 7. They had a big year that year. 10 year, 6.57 to 8.85. If you take the $10,000 invested for 10 years, the S&P 500 had been worth $18,899, and BPH would be worth $23,000. So they gained a little bit.
But will they do it for the next 10 years?
You know,
because here's the deal. Whenever somebody, I'm not picking on you, I promise. When somebody, if you hired, let's say I leave and I decide I'm going to go into this business and I'm going to go, we're together in this business. We're going to go present to a committee. I promise you we can go out there and find somebody that has beat the market over the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Because if nothing else, a random distribution of people will beat the market over 10 years. I mean, that's a fact. So we can find somebody. The key is, are they going to beat them for the next 10 years? And I'm telling you, if you go out and do the reading, very, very few people can beat the S&P 500 over a 10-year period. Buffett, he bet somebody $1 million that they couldn't beat an S&P 500 index fund over a 10-year period. And the winner gets it goes to charity for the winner. But he bet one of the hedge funds.
Richard, why did your research department come up with these particular ones, and why what's the strengths and weaknesses of each of them?
Well, one of the major, components of why these managers are selected is because when the market turns down, they usually do not go down with the market as much as the market. So you get some downside protection. And over longer periods of time, that turns out to be huge. And you can see that on there are two pages, page 7 and page 8. On page 7, which is just basically volatility, they're all less volatile than the market. And then on page, with most of them higher returns, the one that didn't have higher return was BlackRock, and that's gross of fees. Everybody else is net of fees. And on page 8, everybody, if you look at that chart, none of these guys actually, you know, have returns higher than the market when the market goes up. But they all have returns that are much less that go down much less than the market when the market goes down. And that protection on the downside is what results in the better return over longer periods of time. And that's really the driving factor of why these particular managers over somebody that's very volatile than the market. And I had them break it into, okay, give me the first 4 years of the time frame that we've got information on, and give me the last 4 years of the time frame we've got information on from the standpoint of BlackRock. So we could see with BlackRock in there, the first 4 years being when the market really got whacked, and the last 4 years having part of that market in there, but having some of the recovery in there also. And so you see the downside protection of all of those portfolios against the market, and you also see the fact that, hey, you know, they didn't go up. They went up 90% as much as the market when the market went up. And right now we're in a period where the market just went up, so most people tend to lag the market when that happens. And you can see that over the full 6.5-year time frame, they're all less volatile than the market. And they have good downside protection, and a few of them significantly better downside protection.
Richard, I noticed Dreyfus appreciation, that's on your list, correct?
Yes.
Is your recommendation BPH Core selection in? Is that your recommendation for us, or are we talking about buying all of them?
No, I'm not talking about buying all of them. I'm talking about, really, quite frankly, if I look at this and, you know, tell the research people, just leave me this stuff and let me talk about it. There's a BBH Core Select has had incredibly good results, and I would be, you know, could absolutely recommend them, and I could also recommend FMI. If you were to say which one would you really hang your hat on, I would tend to hang my hat on BBH before FMI, but either one of them are very, very good managed.
The BBH is apparently a smaller fund.
Right.
It's not, I mean, I'm looking at my little discount. So
$2.6 billion.
And it won't sell that fund. E-Trade won't sell it. It'll sell the Dreyfus and FMI, but it won't sell the Stralum. Are those because they're under $4 billion, or is there a minimum size that they'll sell?
I don't know.
Since the fund's not available to purchase.
Usually, when you see that, it's frequently it's open only to institutional investors.
Okay, yeah. When I look at BBH, they've got 16% of their assets in non-U.S. stocks.
Okay, and that would be something like Shell Oil.
And FMI has got 13% of
it. Yeah, those would be ADRs that basically are global companies that are headquartered outside the U.S., but a significant, if you will.
But what does that do to our allocation, asset allocation?
It does change it.
Huh?
It does change it.
You have to be careful with that.
Right, but it still leaves you within the overall parameters.
The top 10 FMI are Walmart, Berkshire Hathaway, Cisco, Kimberly, Clark. And BBH.
So what you're doing, you're betting that these people can beat the market for the next 10 years by 100 basis points per year. Nobody's done it yet.
Well, I don't
have in here the full 10 years, but I will say that the 10 years they did do it.
In that last column, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, on page 3, the far right column out there says that...
Oh, yeah, 10 years.
The Russell 1000 is an index.
5.7, BBH was up 735 net of fees.
Right? Yeah. You're saying that's net of their fees.
So they did.
You don't have 10 years.
That is 10 years.
The last column is... That's what it says.
On page 3.
Page 3, all right.
That's a far right column.
Now, Dreyfus did not, because they're a little bit more volatile.
Gravity 5.8.
And Stralum did not. FMI and BBH did. And I would say the reason they did was their downside protection.
Well, you know, of course, all these things, that's pretty narrow securities, 30 or 40 securities, pretty narrow.
Yeah, we could do that. Buy and forget about it.
You ever looked at Nifty 50, you wouldn't know what to do.
Well, to get the same, if you will, return pattern, not necessarily the same results. Statistically, you need of the S&P 500. Statistically, you need 26 securities. But you can basically mimic the S&P 500 with 26 securities.
Well, of course, then when you do that, then you have a greater test as to which one to own and not own.
That's right.
Because it's going to have a bigger impact.
That's right.
On the overall results.
That's correct. And number one, so yes, you do have the what's sometimes referred to as concentration risk, but on average they're, 3.5% or whatever holdings, but from the standpoint of how well do the managers know those securities, I think it's a little bit easier to know, 30, 40, 50 securities than it is 200.
I don't disagree with you on that.
Well, we've got action on this particular agenda item. So, what other questions, comments from the other half of the room and on the board here? Don't you have to talk about this?
On page 4, if you look at, and what I was talking about, the downside protection, if you look at column, the 2008 column on page 4, the Russell 1000 was down 37.6% in 2008, and Brown Brothers was down 22%.
But they were brand new too, weren't they?
Well, how long? What's the inception?
6 years old. So,
do what?
They were just a 6-year-old fund.
No, they've got ten. No, they've been around a lot longer than that. The reason we'd use a 6 was to be able to include
the overlap,
BlackRock, in the
you confused
calculation.
Yeah, BlackRock, then we don't have 10 years.
Manager tenure long. Oh, sorry. Picked up manager tenure. Sorry. So that's the historical. They did better than historical.
Right. And the downside protection, and given the current volatility in the markets.
Where are they headquartered? BBH.
New York.
New York.
I believe it.
Ryan Brothers is New York. What about FMI?
I think they're all, you know,
all
up in New York and Philadelphia and whatever. I mean, they're all, you know, money center advisors.
Well, we're giving them our money. We're talking about a $7 million allotment. Is that right?
Right.
About $7 million.
Whatever the, yeah, that, I think that's about right.
Around
$70,000 a year you could be putting into contributions. You're betting that they're going to be, that they're going to be 100, that they're going to be 100 basis points per year. I'm just telling you.
What's your alternative, Bill?
At least put half of it in an index fund. There are a lot of not-for-profits that index quite a bit. There are a lot of, I mean, we're a for-profit, we index quite a bit. It's harder and harder. Okay, what are you paying for? You're paying for information, and you're paying for somebody to be smart. I mean, all these guys,
well,
you know, half of them went to Yale, half of them went to Harvard. They're all got MBAs, and one's selling and one's buying. Now let's look at the information. If you're dealing with emerging markets, or you're dealing with small caps, sometimes the guy that works the hardest has the most information. This is the S&P 500, or in this case the Russell 1000. Every one of these stocks is covered by multiple analysts. If you've got information that other people don't have, chances are it's illegal. So how are they going to add value? They can be lucky for a while.
Be careful now. We got some investment advisors in the room, Bill.
Hey, I've read his deal. I've read his deal, and it made so. I told him.
I'm an emotional advisor.
Emotional advisor. Okay.
What they do, is not dissimilar from that line of thinking, is it?
No.
It's just hard to add 100 to the large cap section. If you want to have an index fund, that's where you do it. It's in large cap, not necessarily in small cap, because there your manager can do more for you. Would you agree with that?
That's the
or international.
Yeah. Or
your
international
manager should be able to do more for you.
Bill, do you manage Bluebell's investment portfolio?
Yes.
Do you mind if I ask how big it is?
$150 million. And as I said, when the market crashed, we got down to 140% funded. We were 200% funded.
We
had basically the same investment philosophy for the last 31 years, which is coincidentally how long I've been doing it. And
it's a matter of style.
It's been very, very aggressive towards equities. You know, we were like 15% fixed income for a long time. But that's not because we had different demographics. We had very young. The average age when I got there was 33. So
you needed to be aggressive.
You needed to be aggressive. And even now it's only up to 40. So we can still, that's like a 40-year-old in a 401k can be very aggressive. I don't know what the average age is.
Well, ours is 50.
It's older.
We're going to have to start paying here.
It's in here. I just can't remember.
Yeah, it's 52 or 50.
Yeah.
Actuarial.
But even that is still, you know, you've got some length of time to retirement. But
So you recommend an index rather than a
Well, do half of it then. Fund? Buy half of this one and then put half in an index and 15 years from now, then look back. You got to give it 10 plus years to know.
They are 15 years from now.
Huh? Well, my concern.
Can you bring the table index structured funds?
Oh, sure. I mean, there's no problem with doing indexing the large cap. The driving force behind why these guys outperformed was the fact that we had a significant down market. They didn't all participate as much in that down market. And that's what, you know, I knock on wood and hope that the past is prologue, because quite frankly, I still see a lot of volatility in our markets, number one. And number two, I think this market is a little bit old in the tooth. And when it rolls over, I don't know how it's going to roll over. I don't, but I do know that we probably have a bear market somewhere in the near future, whatever the near future
is. Well, rates can go down further.
Within the next several years, I think we're going to see that happen again.
Look at Japan.
Well, the normal cycle is 8 to 10 years where you have it. You go back and look at it for years. 8 to 10 years in your cycle.
Well, this last 10 years,
shorter than that.
The last 10 years, we had two of the worst bear markets of the last 100 years, and boom, right in that 10-year time.
For the sake of time, I don't want to cut anybody else off intentionally, but...
I mean, Jim, can I ask a question, and maybe this won't be the smartest question asked today. If we go ahead and vote to move the large cap management from BlackRock to one of these funds, 3 months from now, you bring us back a similar analysis on an index, a group of index funds, as Mr. Rankin suggested. Are we penalized if we then take that investment in one of these funds and move it to an index fund?
By the time that would be enacted, probably not, because some mutual funds, and I just don't have the data right now, have like a 90-day holding period
restriction.
Yeah, from the standpoint of whatever. But after that point in time, no.
So if we made that decision 90 days from now and we have selected a 90-day hold, then we could time that distribution to where we didn't have to pay that penalty.
That's correct. And the other thing is, if we're going to, nothing against indexing other than the fact that when the market rolls over, you know you're rolling over. And the other thing is that there are a couple of, or at least one I know, strategy from the standpoint of indexing, whether it happens to be the value fund, the growth fund, or the core fund, or whatever within Russell or the S&P funds. But there's also a fundamental, if you will, index approach that instead of weighting things by capitalization, weights them by sales, by earnings, by cash flow, and those types of things. So,
we need to move on this matter. It's getting lunch. We're near lunchtime. So,
I have a question. Do you have to pass a resolution today?
No.
You can table the resolution to the next meeting.
Stays at BlackRock, and we got a problem with that.
We're getting ready. You're right. We don't have to, but we are at a transition point with these guys, and it would, in some regards, it might make sense to do something.
Yeah, we need to get the money out of it. We need to get the money out of this group over at BlackRock.
I agree completely.
So we need to do that. And what we invested in is the question for the day, or the resolution. Correct. And so we need to invest it. We don't need it sitting in cash. And I don't have a problem
with it. Go the other route. Put it in an S&P 500 index fund, and you at least get the market.
Yeah.
And then if you want to take part of that and put it with somebody else, study that out.
Okay, we have a resolution before us that before we ask for reading, would... can we modify that resolution, or do we need to keep it like it is?
I left a blank. You can look at the way I wrote it. Be resolved, blah, blah, blah. Authorized to execute an agreement with blank to provide large cap equity investment. I just left it sort of generic. So it's fill in the blank was the
process. Well, so this is making, are we going to hire the Brogdon Group to do that? Or are we buying the fund?
We'll direct the trust. We're
going to tell them if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. So what do we need to fill in the blank with?
Well, that's one of these firms,
or a combination of a fund,
or an index fund, however that would be styled or named. But that's why I just left it blank. So it's a function of whether you pick one of these firms.
What's your recommendation?
Mine. I I think the BBH fund looks good, and the reason I understand the thing, it may make sense to diversify through an index fund also, but I'm also looking at their return has been, they beat the index over 10 years. These guys have. Now, granted, that's not guaranteed a future, but
okay, nothing. BBH, Jim?
John doesn't vote, but I don't. I would fill in that blank with BBH. One of the questions I had, and we talked about it briefly, was does it make sense to select two out of this group? But if you looked at the top two, they perform pretty much on a parallel. And I didn't see that. I don't see that as further diversification. And again, I like what Director Rankin has suggested, that maybe we do need to add one more category, and an index fund is something that kind of keeps you anchored, then I might see that discussion at the next meeting. But
for now, I
go with BBH.
If you look at page 4, there are some differences in annual returns between BBH and FMI. There are times when BBH added better downside protection in 2008, in 2009, FMI just, really went and had the best performance in 2009, which was actually the only manager that beat the index during that up market time frame. And then had better performance in 10. And also, this last year, when all of a sudden the market's under a little pressure, BBH does better, FMI not quite as much. 2009, FMI does better. So a combination could make a lot of sense also.
Well, both of those funds have over 5% of the money in Berkshire Hathaway.
Good point.
But Berkshire Hathaway ain't doing very good either.
Every dog has his day.
Oh, I mean, that's right. Every dog has his day. It's overall a good fund right now.
But so what you would do if you bought two, go back to Jim's point, you'd end up a higher concentration in Berkshire than any other particular.
Well, no, you'd still have the same percentage concentration.
But
it's not additive.
Well, that's true.
What do you want to do, Mr. Collinsworth? Make it simple and slow.
I would vote yes on BBH,
okay.
But I really agree with Director Rankin.
Look at the index.
Come back and look at that index.
I agree. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
So, Leroy?
No, totally.
Okay, so is that the consensus, Bob?
Well, if they go back and look at the index, is it going to cost us money to sell again?
It doesn't take long to look at the index, first of all.
There's no commissions involved. There's no front-end loads on either one.
It may be 90.
No, there are no loads on it. The only thing is we'd have to make sure we didn't get hit for a 90-day time frame, but that would be...
And the Vanguard Fund, the Admiral Fund, which is $250,000 more, it has a 90-day hold or something.
Yeah, most of them have those holds.
Most of them do on the institutional side.
Could we do this? It doesn't take long to look at an index fund. It really does. Not with today's technology and tools. I mean, we can do that in a matter of a few hours. Don't y'all agree?
Well, you have the index fund in here.
Well, the Russell one. Is that the only one? What about Vanguard?
Well, Vanguard.
I would, quite frankly, I would prefer the Russell over the S&P because the S&P is an administered index. It's not really a market index. They change that all the time. The Russell just takes the top 1,000, and that's it, guys. And that is the large cap market.
Yeah, which is really what our segment needs to be. That's our focus. So
well, that and that's why we use that for.
So my point in that, is there any reason to wait to do it?
I don't know what additional information could be gained by waiting, other than we can look at longer time frames. I can get more than 10 years maybe. I don't know how far out I get them. But that would be it because the Russell 1000 is here. I mean, we have that data.
My point is I don't think there's any basis or any, we're not going to gain any additional information. If we're going to do it, then let's do it. If we're going to do it, let's do it. Let's put 60% of it in the BBH and 40% of it in the Russell, or half and half. Would that be a,
any,
okay with
you? That would work with for me. I mean, I don't have a, my only bias against the index is when the market turns down, you know you're down. And somebody, you know, that actually has protected on the downside, I know it's not 100% guarantee, but I knock on wood that the past is prologue and we get there.
Okay. We've taken plenty of
downside. I don't think I've expressed things correctly here. You realize for them to beat the S&P 500 for the next 10 years means they have to have done it for 20 years because they did it for 10. So now they have to do it for 20. So the relevant question is, how many people beat the S&P 500 over a 20-year period?
I can probably get that information for, you know, the next meeting. And I'm talking about institutional. I'm not talking about the broad market.
I'm talking about equity, large-cap equity advisors that beat the S&P 500 over a 20-year period.
Right.
It's going to be a very, very, very small number.
Could very well be, but what I'm talking about is institutional advisors. Not
net of fees.
Not the retail market.
Institutional, net of fees.
Okay, we're at kind of at a point where we've got to deal with this money. We've got the $7 million we need to get handled. I think that it's advisable. You know, what I would like to do is request, John, if it's okay with the committee, that we authorize the investment for the BPH fund for at least half of that, if not all of it. You know, the other alternative would be to go half with the Russell or all of it in the BPH and then come back to committee. So, because it sounds like we got some more information to talk about, but let me say this, guys, we can argue over investment matters forever, and we don't know what the hell's going to happen with it, and we can argue forever over it, and it's a really big challenge. I respect your input, Bill. I think it's very valuable input, by the way.
Hey, you don't hurt my feelings no matter what you decide. No, seriously, you do what you think's best.
The one observation I'd make as a potential beneficiary of this is at least we're discussing it.
Yeah, we're hashing it out.
We waited for 7 years, and there was no discussion about the direction of investment for this fund. And we had one manager doing it under a very narrowly defined set of criteria, and put us in the position we're in right now.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad I added some controversy.
There you go.
Well, food for thought.
And let me tell you, you got to be jolly when we start to eat lunch, and we got to finish. I think we're going to try to finish this, aren't we? Before we
break. Yeah, there's one other item after this.
Okay.
One other agenda.
Let's go ahead and put it all in the BPH.
Is that right? BPH.
BBH. Brown Brothers.
No, we don't do that.
That's from the settlement side.
I gotta have food, y'all.
Brooks Brothers, no, that's a clothing store. It's just Brown Brothers.
All right, Brown Brothers. BBH core select in.
So you want to read it? Okay.
Yeah, go ahead. After all that discussion, we're gonna do what you printed. Please read.
So we're gonna put it all in there. Okay. The following resolution is presented for consideration by the Retirement Committee of the Bradshaw River Authority for adoption as August 13, 2012 meeting. Be it resolved that the Retirement Committee of the Brazos River Authority authorizes the General Manager CEO to execute an agreement with BBH Core Select N to provide large cap equity investment management services to the retirement plan for employees of the Brazos River Authority Inferences Plan, with the agreements contain such terms and conditions consistent with the investment policies of the plan and in the best interest of the Brazos River Authority.
Okay, you've heard a reading of the resolution. Is there a motion? Is there a motion to adopt such?
So moved.
So moved by Mr. Forte. And is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Wheelis. And please poll the committee.
Chair Dennis?
Yes.
Director Bell?
No.
Director Christian?
Yes.
Director Rankin?
No.
Mr. Collinsworth?
Yes.
Mr. Forte?
Yes.
Mr. Wheelis?
Yes.
Okay, next item on our agenda.